Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to help spread the word that this show brings on special guests that can inspire into making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at answers.network. You can browse through a variety of heartfelt and enlightening topics. I am confident that there will be something that you will find to bring greater joy to your life. Now, I also have a favor to ask. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is a powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, today, we're going to be discussing leadership and so much more. The title of our guest's new book, Leader by Accident, Lessons in Leadership, Loss, and Life, does just that. Now, I looked up some quotes by other leaders because I wanted to sort of set a little bit of a tone. So one is, realize their potential and inspiring them to work with you to achieve a shared vision for the future. And that's by Kathy Mazzarelli. She's the CEO of Graybar. And another one is, leadership is helping other people succeed, inspiring and uniting people behind a common purpose, and then being accountable. And that's by Paul Pullman, former CEO of Unilever. And of all the leadership quotes that I went through, and I went through a lot of them, none of which said, be divisive. So there was one common thread. What's that?
Put yourself first.
Yeah, exactly. And none of them said, put yourself first. Exactly. So our guest, Jim Rafferty, is a marketing and communications consultant and principal at JMR Marketing, which is actually spelled JMRKITING LLC, which is in Baltimore, Maryland, where he resides. He's a former radio announcer and program director. Jim now has put three decades of marketing experience to work, helping businesses communicate better, writing in a conversational and entertaining style. He's also a former Boy Scout leader, the story of which serves as the catalyst for his book, Leader by Accident. Jim, welcome to Answers Network.
Thanks so much, Alan. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, it is my pleasure. And boy, the timing sure is right. As we were talking about before we went on the air, doing this show over 12 years, I've had other people on. We've talked about leadership. I think leadership is very, very important throughout the world. And wow, it sure is in that area. So one of my questions is, are we headed down a wrong path, or are we, are we going backwards in the sense that we're recreating some things from the past that never should happen?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And I think there's probably a couple of ways to look at it. I think you could go back beyond certainly the current international situation. We're seeing some pretty amazing leadership in some places and some really, awful leadership in others. And I think you can say that without getting into politics or anything else. It's pretty clear. But, even before that, though, these past couple of years have really, in some ways, sort of forced a little rewrite of the book on leadership, as we've all had to learn different ways of doing things just in common business situations, where all of a sudden the team we're leading is like you and I are now, we're, separated by computer screens and we can't occupy the same physical space. And we've had to learn new ways of doing things. And I think we've had to learn new levels of empathy too, as the people we're leading are now trying to homeschool their kids or take care of an aging parent, all while they're trying to learn how to work remotely and forget that they're muted on Zoom and, all this, that, and the other thing. And so, yeah, it's been a challenge on a lot of levels, I think, over these last couple of years.
One of the things that I thought was very interesting, and we'll get into it a little bit when we talk about the book, is, you talk about your being thrust into a leadership role through volunteering. Volunteering is something I so much believe in. And share with us a little bit how learning leadership through volunteership in ways in which many of us should look at, even when we're dealing with our own family or our own company, our own church, whatever it is, because I started thinking about the fact that it would seem like when you're dealing with volunteers, if you don't do it right, they're just going to leave, you know, whereas, you know, I think, you know, employees or sometimes family, you know, we will take liberties that maybe we shouldn't. So share a little bit about how that differs and why that might be something that is so good that maybe we all should really be focusing on getting our young people more involved in volunteership at an earlier age.
Right. Yeah, sure. And the backstory of the book is that what really is the catalyst for it, I became scoutmaster of our son's Boy Scout troop under really tragic circumstances when the existing scoutmaster, and this is going back. Yeah, I still have trouble saying that, mm-hmm. honestly. Yeah. So at that moment, when we didn't know if this volunteer organization was going to survive, they turned to a guy, me, who had been a Boy Scout for all of about 2 weeks and really had no outdoor skills or scouting experience or any of the things that you typically would want in a scoutmaster. And, you know, to your question of leading volunteers, we knew right up front that this was not going to be a one-person job to shepherd these right. guys through what had happened and get the troop moving forward again. And literally the very first two things I think were significant in those early days. One was that I was very upfront about my lack of experience with both mm-hmm. the scouts and with their parents. And I said, look, if this is going to work, we're going to do it together. And a lot of people are going to need to step up and do some more than they have in the past. And that second part of that, the simple act of asking, really, you know, in the heat of the moment, it's really easy to say, oh, okay, I'll do more. And yeah, I'll step in and rah, rah, and all of that. But, you know, everybody delivered and hung in there. And a year later, the troop had not only survived, but was really thriving, was, you know, larger in numbers and busier in activities and just really had a great vibe about it, you know, where the boys were having fun and you could tell. So, you know, I think in a volunteer situation, like you talk about, I, you know, sometimes you just have to ask. That really is the first start, you know, and let people know that you know they're volunteers, you know, you're not holding a paycheck over their heads or anything, and that their work is appreciated.
Yeah. What were some of the lessons that you learned that helped you quickly adapt, succeed, and as you said, thrive in this role?
Not hiding from what had happened, for one. We faced, you know, the young men of the troop were there for each other. Their adult leaders were there for them. And, you know, keeping busy helped, too. We tried to schedule, you know, a few more activities and things to keep everybody distracted. It's too strong a word, but, you know, engaged in other things so that we wouldn't just be dwelling on this terrible tragedy that had happened. And it worked. You know, the young men were amazing. I, you know, the young men, the leadership team around me and the greater group of parents who stepped up and did more, you know, collectively all made this work. And then I should say, you know, sort of the part two, that in itself, I guess, is an engaging story. And that's sort of the catalyst for the book. But part two of it really is how those experiences and me being forced into some camping and hiking things I had never done and really leaving my comfort zone as an adult really paved the way for an experience a few years later when I lost the job I'd had for more than two decades and wound up hanging out my shingle as an entrepreneur for the first time, which had never crossed my mind. So, you know, one trip out of the comfort zone directly led to another. So a good bit of the book is about the value of challenging yourself and stepping out of the comfort zone.
You know, one of the things that I loved about the book was it seemed like almost every time I read the word leader or leadership, I also read the word team. And I thought that was huge. You know, and even as you were just speaking, it reminded me of it. You know, it's you kept referring to the leadership team. And I think that's so important in businesses where, you know, everybody steps in, like you said, and everybody feels like they're a part of that team. What are some of the things then when you went from there into entrepreneurship to where you thought, okay, I guess I better start putting together a team because I'm being thrust into this, like it or not.
Right. And in business, especially where it seems like our ego is more at stake than maybe in other spheres of our life, you know, it's a real challenge to say, hey, I'm going to bring somebody on here who is better at something than I am, you know, mm-hmm. who complements my weaknesses. That takes, you know, a certain level of confidence to do that. And that's exactly what happened in the scout troop. And then I had three assistant scout masters who offered to step up and volunteer and sort of, you know, be my training wheels as I learned the scouting stuff myself. So they were the guys who did know how to camp, mm-hmm. how to hike and kayak and canoe and all of those things. And we were a great team together. And when I hung out my shingle, I was and still am pretty much a solo entrepreneur. I mean, I have partners with for development. I realized pretty early on that I will be better at what I do if I have some sort of support around me. And one of the first things I did was join a monthly business peer group that mm-hmm. meets, you know, one morning a month. We sit around a table for 3 hours and we solve each other's problems. And we get to know each other really on a very personal level. And I've done that for almost the full 10 years that I've been an entrepreneur. And now actually I facilitate a group too. So it's two mornings a month. And that for me is almost in almost any situation, because if you are the boss in, you know, an office in a group environment, it sort of gets you out of that echo chamber of, you know, people telling you what you want to hear, and you start to get some unvarnished advice. And if you're a solo entrepreneur like me, it replaces that office tribe that you don't have and places to bounce ideas off of. And the other part that was the realization that when I sat around the table at these meetings and offered advice, that there was some value to it for people. And that was a huge mm-hmm. confidence booster in early days as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, there's a question that's coming in. I'm looking at it right now. And again, I want to thank those people that take the time to send in a question either before the show or during the show. And this one reads, as an HR director, we are always searching for people with leadership skills. We have a set of standard questions that we use in our interviews. I am curious what your book focuses on that sets it apart from others in this area, and how it would help to improve a company's process in training existing staff as well as in its hiring efforts. And this is from Jordan in New Jersey.
It's a good question. And the book is not specifically about hiring in a business environment. Fair to be right up. I'm looking at leadership qualities. I'm looking at, you know, not being about me all the time, right? Somebody who's going to be able to put the other members of the team first and genuinely be concerned about them as human beings. I mean, one of my favorite business quotes is people join companies and they quit bosses. And I've seen, you know, I've seen so many examples that we all have, right, with the great resignation and 4 point however many million people resigning every month and mm-hmm. all of that. And part of that, I think, is that they're not getting that from their immediate leadership. And I think these days I am looking especially for a lot of empathy. We alluded to that earlier with the changing situations mm-hmm. we've had, the remote workforce, the virus still hasn't gone away, right? And there's still some fear there. And why should I not wear a mask? And people, you can't just flip a switch and turn that off when we get to work. So I think we've got to reach deep as business leaders and find some extra measure of empathy to be successful at what we do.
Yeah, I saw an interview and it kind of shocked me, but they were interviewing the CEO, and I don't remember of which company, but they had like tens of thousands of employees. So it was a very, very large company. And they were asking him what's been the most difficult thing they've had to deal with. And they said the employee situation, because they said that they had meetings and planned for the fact that they would have about 15% of their workforce that probably would not come back. Hmm. You know, as far as, you know, that's what they had planned for. They said in some areas of their not come back. And he said for a variety of reasons, he said some of which were because they got used to doing it at home. And in fact, that one of the comments was that they had some people that said, well, you know, I'm not going to come back unless we set something up to where you're paying for my vehicle and my gasoline and everything to drive to and from work. And especially because of what that costs these days, you know, that so people are looking at things in such a different way that it was very interesting. But again, it kind of shocked me when he said 55%. But that also may go to what you're saying in regards to, you know, I don't know that particular company, but maybe that company needs to look a little deeper at their hierarchy to see why they have such a higher percentage than maybe other companies like them.
Yeah, because most of the numbers I've seen like that are hospitality, restaurant, that kind of thing. And that you get it because they were completely out of work for a while and a lot of people had to find other things to do and maybe they like those other things better. You know?
Sure.
But if that's happening in a, you know, a quote unquote career / office setting, then sure, that's, there's some red flags there, I think, in terms of what the culture there is. And another part of the book really deals with the importance of the language we use, you know, and how mm-hmm. it relates to our company culture. And I tell a couple of stories where, you know, things that I thought were throwaway comments, small talk, that kind of thing really had a much bigger impact on, you know, say one of my scouts than I had expected. And then there's a little excerpt in there from one of Tom Peters' books. And he says, and I'll paraphrase here, but basically he's like, company culture is formed by the way the boss greets the receptionist when she walks in the front door in the morning. Company culture is formed by the casual comments the boss makes with the three or four people she talks to on her way to the office. Company culture is shaped by the tone she uses when she responds to that handful of emails in the first 15 minutes of the morning. Things like that. Those are all the little things that have to do with our language and mm-hmm. the way we interact yeah. with people around us that have maybe a much bigger impact than we sometimes realize on company culture. And, you know, sometimes, you know, in my case, when I made what I thought was small talk and it was much more meaningful, that turned out to be a good thing. But in a business setting, it could very likely go the other way. And when that happens, you've got, you know, at least one person then who's cheesed off and you're usually the last one to know about it. And that's a problem.
Yeah. And I think you're right there. I mean, there's so many ways in which things can be taken these days. It's amazing. I was just reading something and, you know, and somebody made a comment where they were paying a compliment to someone and the person's response was so heated that it nearly caused a riot because they took it completely differently. And they're like, but I was complimenting you, you know? And so, yes, I can see how that can, you know, that can certainly be of concern. One of my, you mentioned a couple of stories just a moment ago. And one of the things that I love to do on the show, and anybody that's a regular viewer or listener knows, can you share with us a couple of your favorite stories in that area of choosing the right language?
Sure. The one on that topic was one of my scouts who was then a junior in high school. So fall of his junior year, and he and I were setting up chairs before a meeting or something really routine like that. And we're chatting. And I asked him if he'd started to think about not specific colleges so much as sort of majors, what directions he wanted to go. And we tossed out a few ideas. And then he said, Mr. Rafferty, what do you think I should do? And I said, well, I don't know. What do you like to do? What interests you? And we talked a little more. And I pretty much forgot the conversation. It never happened. A year and a half later, when he reached Eagle Scout, he sent me a thank you note. And he recalled that conversation that I had forgotten and said that was the first time in his life at, you know, 15, 16 years old, somewhere around there. That was the first time in his life that anyone had ever asked him what he wanted to do with his life. And that just really struck me between the eyes that, you know, for me, small talk, but for him, much more meaningful. And he would have been successful whether or not that conversation had ever happened. But, you know, I think it changed the perspective a little bit. And that's the kind of thing that we have to be really sensitive to as leaders in a business setting. And you just mentioned it there, that part of the Tom Peters quote, when I speak to a group, I always single out that bit about the tone and quality of the emails, because we have so many ways to communicate now. Right. And so many of them all have been talking. It's so misinterpreted and taken the wrong way. And again, you know, then somebody's upset and you're the last to know. So, you know, if I'm the boss, I'm sure going to try to be in the habit of following up in person or by voice or in some way that actually, you know, touches someone as a human being and not characters on a screen, and make sure not only that the message was received and understood, but that it was interpreted the way I intended.
Well, and along those lines, there was something that you just said. One of the things that I got from it when you talked about your conversation with this young man was, I think you did two things that was huge. The first was you asked the question, but the second one was you listened to the answers. And I think that is so important, especially with younger people, is I think that, you know, that there are so many situations in one of my companies, we with younger people, what they want to do or, you know, just ask them questions about their life. And they've looked at me like you said, either, you know, nobody's asked them or everybody's told them what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And said, you know, because you are this, whatever that may be, from that family or whatever, this is what you will do or what you should do. Which then brought up the thought to me was sometimes we need to make sure that we're not shooting on ourselves.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, everybody wants to be heard, right? And I think especially mm-hmm. the generations that are up and coming in the workplace now really want to be heard in a different way than maybe we did, in terms of they've a greatly developed social conscience, much more than, and again, huge generalization, but much more in general than in our generation. To the extent that you as a leader, that an organization can indulge that and, you know, not lip service, but make them know that they're heard and that you care, the better off things go.
Now, one of the things that you talk about in the book that I found very interesting, and it struck a note with me, was getting outside your comfort zone. And there are times in which I've done it. It's not comfortable. That's why you have to get outside of it. But talk about some of the life-changing effects that can come from that when you do take that big step that happens to be outside your comfort zone.
Sure. And it is uncomfortable. And just for the record, I also make the point that we don't need to live outside our comfort zones, right? There's no bigger homebody than me. And I mean, we all need time to binge watch and cuddle up with the dog or the cat or whatever we do. And, you know, that's mm-hmm. fine. Yeah. We need our comfort zones. But, mm-hmm. you know, the story of the wise preacher who said, you know, God loves you just the way you are, and he loves you too much to let you stay that way. And that's it. I mean, if we don't leave our comfort zones, then we're not changing as human beings. So for me, you know, certainly stepping into that volunteer role as a scoutmaster, for which I had, you know, zero qualifying experience, that was a big step out of my comfort zone that then fueled the next one a few years later when, you know, I went downtown and launched a company, you know, filed the paperwork and came back and told the state of Maryland to stop sending the unemployment checks. That was a pretty big step out of my comfort zone, right? So, and, you know, then more recently, actually writing a book, that was a step out of my comfort zone. So there's, you know, and things like this that I don't do all the time. So there is value in it. That's how we grow and that's how we change. And it doesn't mean that every step out of comfort zone is the part that I think we miss. And this is another thing I typically share when I speak to an audience. You know, we're so busy trying to get on to the next thing, and our phone is buzzing at us 1,000 times a day, and, you know, email alerts are popping up and all that stuff, that we lose our time for reflection. And when you have done the thing that makes you uncomfortable and stepped out of your comfort zone and at least tried, for heaven's sake, you have to take a little time to give yourself some credit, to give yourself a pat on the back for trying, even if it didn't work out, and to think about what went right, what went wrong, and what you'll do differently next time. You know, we're so busy getting on to the next thing that we forget sometimes that there are lessons in the rearview mirror, I think.
Well, we are speaking with Jim Rafferty. We are talking about his book, Leader by Accident, Lessons in Leadership, Loss, and Life. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like Jim to answer the question, isn't leadership? So for everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. So we are talking with Jim Rafferty, and we're talking about leadership, and his book is Leader by Accident. So, Jim, when we went to break, I posed the very broad question, what is leadership and what isn't leadership?
So one of the great things about the scouting program is that leadership and teaching leadership is one of the pillars of it. So, you know, you sort of get it from both ways in terms of being a leader, but also trying to grow new leaders. And so I'll start with part two of that, what isn't leadership, because I think it also has parallels in our business world. But what we would see happen over and over again is a young man, a teenager, a certain age would get promoted to, say, patrol leader. So now he's the leader of half a dozen other kids. And he would sort of rub his hands together and go, okay, now you little peons have to do what I say to do because I'm the boss. And they would cheerfully ignore him and somebody would wind up in tears and, you know, and they would learn a lesson, because that's what leadership isn't, right? Leadership isn't, I'm the boss, do this. And I think in business, and I may be projecting here because this was me when, you know, 28 years old, I was in the radio business and got a job as a program director managing half a dozen people who were all significantly older than I was. And that was kind of my default, I think. I sort of like, well, you know, but I'm the boss, so do it, you know, and that's not effective. You know, we live and learn and we grow it. I think one of the things that made me successful as a leader in the scout troop and even in what I do now is not being afraid to admit that you don't know what you don't know. Again, as I said early on here, I was pretty upfront with the boys about my lack of experience in the scouting stuff. And there's a good side to that too, because a lot of times their first step into a wobbly canoe or, you know, whatever onto the trail was mine too. So it gives you a measure of empathy that maybe you don't otherwise have. But, you know, I think pretending that you're something you're not is a surefire recipe for failure. Mm-hmm. And not only that, when you show that vulnerability, I think people are inclined to want to help you. And so, you know, that's, you know, I would advise that at any level of leadership. And it sort of circles back to what we talked about with getting in people to compliment, to, you know, to admit that you know what you don't know, that you don't know what you don't know, and to be confident enough to bring in somebody who's good at the stuff that you're not.
Can you share with us a few of the things, I think we'll call them nuggets, that translate really well to actionable steps for business leaders?
Sure. Throughout the book, so there's a part of the scouting program called the Scoutmaster Minute. Mm-hmm. And as the name would suggest, it's basically a little mini homily delivered at the end of each weekly meeting to send the boys out the door with a positive, motivational, inspirational thought. And when I became Scoutmaster, I thought, well, I may not know, you know, three ways to start a fire without matches, but giving a homily to a captive audience is something I can probably do. So I worked hard on those, and I kept an archive of them those 5 years. So I would then take a lesson that I was trying to teach the scouts at that point, and then the following chapter translate it to something meaningful for you or me or, you know, people in business. So that's sort of the overall structure of Leader by Accident. It takes that path. And a lot of it translates surprisingly well. I mean, there's one in there about the power of saying you're sorry, you know, of a simple apology. And the business story that I shared with the scouts had to do with the Toro company, the lawnmower power equipment mm-hmm. folks. Yeah. And when you're in that space, people get hurt using your products. And up until then, the typical response was you line up a bunch of lawyers and you make it difficult and expensive for them. And they tried something else. They started sending a representative to the person. When somebody got hurt using a piece of Toro equipment, no matter where they were, Toro would send somebody there, and that person would say, "Hey, I'm sorry that happened. We're sorry it happened. Let's figure out what happened here so it doesn't happen to someone else." And that simple gesture saved them something like $120 million in legal costs wow. over several years. Yeah, it's amazing. And there was an actual physiological change that happens when we look someone in the eye and say, "I'm sorry, you know, I screwed up. It was my fault." You know, as long as we don't follow it with three reasons why we were really right and they were wrong, you know.
Yes.
Which is always the temptation. So that's something that, you know, I taught to the scouts because, you know, teenage boys, I have noticed, can be difficult on their parents. And, you know, they tend to get their backs up about stuff. And I said, "Guys, tell you what, next time you mess up, try looking your mom in the eye and saying, 'I'm sorry.' See what happens." I don't know if any of them ever did it or not, but it was worth a try. But that was one that translates for business pretty well. The other thing I think that we're learning through the book that I think translates to business and beyond for us is this sense of cultivating a sense of gratitude. That was always a big thing of mine that, you know, I think does not happen by accident. I think some of us are wired to maybe be a little more positive than others. But, you know, it's about that it takes really a little effort to call out the things that are good as we go through our days. And that if we don't make that effort, it's really easy to fall into the, you know, all American trap of just complaining about everything all the time. And, and we all know that person. So, and what's interesting about that to me is, you know, I first delivered that message back in 2008 or nine, I think. In other words, you know, long before we arrived at this social media political climate of ours where everybody's shouting at each other all the time. And it's just this relentless fire hose of negativity in what we consume every day. Mm-hmm. So I think it's even more important did then to call out the things that are good. I know some people do gratitude journals, and if you have the time and discipline to do that, I think that's wonderful. Mine's a little simpler. I just, you know, every night, last thing I do before I close my eyes is come up with three things that happened that day that I'm grateful for. And some days it's a challenge to come up with three things. And some days it's a challenge to decide which three things were most important. And that's also a really useful exercise. But either way, I recommend to anyone of any age at any place in their life to put a little effort into cultivating that sense of gratitude. It's so important.
Well, as if we set this up, which I know we didn't, for those of you, if you go to the website, if you go to answers.network, I have a gratitude journal. It is free to all of you and is one that we started a year ago. For some of, you know, we wanted to give them something because at times what we were doing was not something that they necessarily wanted, but it was something that they needed. And we started using the gratitude journals. And what we realized was, just as you said, how much more pleasant everything was. So here we were taking them out of an environment that they, in many cases, wanted to stay in, even though it wasn't good for them. But yet, once we brought in the gratitude journals, we noticed just a huge change in the overall attitude just by getting them to talk about what they're grateful for. And it's a fill-in-the-blank thing, you know, that it's a 21-day fill in the blank. But anyway, we put it together and it went so well that we put it on the website, and it's free to everybody, and it's just for tears for touch and gratitude that if we can start our day, and or as you said, you know, you're ending your evening with gratitude, and I start each morning with a gratitude meditation, and I think it makes quite a difference, especially in some of the times that we're all dealing with right now.
I love that worked out the way it just did. That's why. if you are watching or listening, I promise you, I swear, as a former Boy Scout leader, we did not rehearse that. Okay.
Okay. Well, we have another question that has come in, and question or comment. This one reads, I really liked your reference to having been a scoutmaster. I was one as well for many years in North Carolina. Teaching children and youth life and outdoor skills is an important part of building character and self-worth. This is the foundation for becoming a leader. Being a family or on, really looking forward to reading your book. It is on the way from Amazon right now. Thank you so much. And this is from Greer in Nevada.
Thank you so much, Greer. I appreciate that in ways you do not understand. I truly do. Thank you. And yeah, it's so important. And I always had that sense, and I still do, and maybe even more so today, that, you know, those Scoutmaster minutes and really all the little things that happen in that program, you know, all the opportunities to interact, you know, that is such a critical stretch of a young person's life, those teenage years, and the opportunity to be another positive voice in their ear, you know, reinforcing what they heard at home when they have so many readily available sources of less desirable material, right? You know, mm-hmm. It was just always felt so important. And it was really, really gratifying to me that a number of our teaching Eagles in career and a number of them mentioned those Scoutmaster minutes as something that were meaningful to them as they went through those years. So that makes me really happy to hear. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about that, because one of the things that seems to have changed, and maybe it's because my children are grown now, so I don't see it as much. But I don't see as much. I mean, I used to get, you know, emails all the time on, you know, where the next Scoutorama is, or, you know, whatever the next event was. And even though my kids were beyond that, I still liked the fact that I was seeing this, or my brother belongs to a camping group. And so if we would go out and see him there at one of the camp things, you know, I would notice that there's a scout group that's doing something. And I like that. I'm not seeing it that much. Has scouting been on a downward turn as far as that, or is this something that maybe COVID has really caused a major hit for it?
Probably some of both. And again, I'm not actively involved anymore. I know that even pre-COVID scouting, you know, at the national level, certainly was going through challenges with all the lawsuits and the bankruptcy and all of that. And you know, I mentioned in the book, every time scouting tries to change with the times, you know, they welcome gay adult leaders, and you know, the Mormon contingent headed for the door, which, you know, was a significant portion of their membership, allowing, you know, female scouts now, which, you know, great. If that's, you know, what everybody wanted to do, that's, you know, perfect. But it's certainly, they've had their challenges. And in terms of overall numbers, I don't know. I can answer for the troop that I was involved with, which still meets right down the street. I've seen some of them fairly recently, and they're still there and doing very well. They had an Eagle ceremony. They asked me to provide a copy of my book, which was nice. I donated one to their for their new Eagle Scout just a few weeks ago. But they're doing great. So I think, you know, at the micro level, there are still some great success stories. I know there's another troop near us that's much larger that continues to thrive. But, you know, certainly in the bigger picture, scouting has had its challenges, there's no doubt.
So if you were able to speak to, if this was a show and, or say it's a conference of scout leaders, and not just the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, the, you know, every type of youth group that's out there, and you were speaking to that group of leaders that are with these young people, how get across to them?
Thank you. For starters, truly. I mean, yeah. And this is true here, and it's true everywhere. There are people who donate so many hundreds of hours a year to the scouting program, who continue for years, if not decades, after their own kids have passed through and moved on. That was not a practical solution for me because I was launching a new entrepreneurship, you know. So, but, you know, they are the people who make it work. And what they do is so important because, you know, we need leaders. We need young people to be learning the things that scouting teaches. And yeah, parents are trying to teach that too, but scouting is a reinforcing voice, I think, for what the young men are learning at home. So So number one would be, yeah, thank you for stepping up. And number two, I think, you know, I would circle back to just your finger. You know, I always made it a point to know what the young men in our troop were doing when they weren't at scouts. You know, whether what instrument they played, what sport they played, that kind of thing, just to sort of care about the whole person. And I think, you know, to the extent that you don't run afoul of HR, that's a good thing to be as a boss too, to know, you know, if your team knows that you care about the whole person, there are lines there clearly that we don't want to cross. But if your team knows that you really care about them and not just the work that they're producing between 9 and 5 or whatever your hours are, then things are going to go better for you.
You know, I was, as you were saying that, I was thinking about some of the other messages and stuff. And I love the fact that you started with thank you. But, you know, one of the messages, you know, I think might be that, you know, get more people involved. I went to the grocery store again after not seeing them for a while, the last couple of years. And there was a gentleman out there. And as we walked past each other and we were looking and it's like, and I thought, God, he looks so familiar. And he stopped me and he said, excuse me, but you look really familiar. And in my case, being an international detective, I don't know that I immediately want to acknowledge that. It's like, I paused for a moment trying to think, okay, who is he? And then I realized that, his son had been in one of the same scout groups as my son had been over 20 years ago.
Oh, wow. But
what was beautiful was he was out there with his granddaughter now.
Wow. Oh, that's
fantastic. And she took over. It's nice. And she went into her thing, you know, so how many boxes are you going to get and so on and so forth. And let me tell you about what I'm doing. And she, I got a couple and I took them to work and just gave them away. But I thought she is going to be a leader. You know, she had all the tools. So I think the other thing for parents out there, when you're thinking about your children and you're thinking about the things that you want them to get involved with, think about the things that are going to help teach them the same things that maybe you were taught or that you want to be taught. And leadership is certainly one of them.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard, and not to go off on a rant, but I think one of the challenges for scouts also is that the proliferation of club sports to the point where there's no off season for a lot of these kids anymore. You know, and there are troops who are like, well, if you can't be on time and in your scout uniform, don't come. We're like, get here when you can, wear your baseball shirt if you have to, because we know we're competing for your time and your more than your time, your heart and your mind. And, you know, I think that is another factor in scouting, because families have to make choices. There are limited hours and limited places you can drive people and, you know, that kind of thing.
We've got another question that has come in. And again, I want to thank those. This one reads, we seem to have reached a very dangerous time in leadership worldwide. What would you advise the common people in countries where the leadership has gotten out of control? And it says, i.e. the war in Ukraine, etc. This is from Roger in California.
Oh, keep the faith. I don't know. I mean, we're all just horrified at me. Ukraine has a good leader, you know, and I think ultimately that's has helped them immensely so far in their heart and their spirit and what they've been able to do so far in resisting the invasion. Will it be enough in the long term? I don't know, but it certainly has made an impactful difference. And I think that the people do see that and are inspired by it. You know, beyond that, I'm not sure. I don't know. It seems that no matter, you know, at any point in history, we've had our monsters, you know, are people who don't want to play by the rules and who want to bully other countries and all that. Yeah. And, you know, all we can really do, I think, is keep the faith.
Yeah. And I think if I were to add to that, and the nice part about this show, the show does go worldwide because we get questions sometimes that come in from other countries. And that is, look at your own leaders and look at what they're doing. And if they're not doing enough, let them know. Mm-hmm. Or ask the question, ask the leaders at whatever level and work your way up. Why are you standing by the side? Tell us why. Maybe there is a good reason, but why are you allowing our country to continue to do business with that country that is doing this? What does that say about us? Let's start putting pressure where pressure is needed. And when people ask, and again, the question was, what can we do as the common person who's not in a government place?
Yeah. And what you said right there at the very end brings up the greater point. There's really no one in any situation who should not try to act like a leader. You don't have to be a boss to be the leader, mm-hmm. right? To be empathetic to the people around you and, to see the bigger picture and to make it not about yourself. And I think the more we do that, the better we are to each other, the better off we are in the long run.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for writing the book. For everybody out there, the book is Leader by Accident, Lessons in Leadership, Loss, and Life. Jim, I assume they can get the book at anywhere. Obviously, one of our listeners have already ordered it through Amazon, yep. But if they'd like to get a hold of you, is there a best way to do that?
Sure. Leaderbyaccident.com, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the places that sell the book and all the other things you'd expect to find there. But sure, that's a great way to get a hold of me. And I love that this was so interactive. I love that we have questions as we're going. That's fantastic.
Yes. Well, again, thank you so much. Is there any parting words you would like to share?
Use your turning signals. No. Seriously, I'm kidding, sort of. But when I talk about treating each other nicely, because I see this every day, right? You see the people in traffic who don't, who just drive like they're the only ones on the road. And that some of them are getting to the office and going, oh, time to be an empathetic leader now. And it doesn't work mm-hmm. that way, right? It's not a switch we can flip. Treat each other nice all the time, whether you're at work or not.
Okay, well, along those lines, I'm going to add something I haven't shared before, at least not on the air. If you're building up that much anxiety or you're building up that much frustration while you're driving, here's another way to look at it. When that person cuts you off or that person does something that you think is so incredibly stupid, turn, and they're not going to hear you, but turn and just say, I'm sorry. And I had a friend of mine in the car one time that looked at me like I was insane and said, why did you just say you're sorry to that person when they were doing something really stupid and dangerous and everything else? And I said, well, if you look at it as if there is one universal knowledge, one universal energy, and you and I sitting in the car were using up too much of that and we didn't leave enough for them. So if you can turn it into something that makes you laugh, because you're the only one that's hurting from it, yeah. Because they didn't see anything that happened, and that stress that you put on yourself doesn't change what they did.
Great.
do you have another book coming up? Do you have anything coming up that we need to share with anybody?
Not yet. No, I'm
not yet.
No, we're going to let the first one play out here and see how that goes. But that took long enough.
All right. Well, please, if you end up having a tour or you have another book coming out, please let us know. You're welcome on the show anytime.
Thanks so much, Alan. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, be with us next week when we are joined by author Sarah Payton to discuss her new book, Your Resonant Self Workbook, From Self-Sabotage to Self-Care. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network. And you can subscribe to the show through YouTube, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more. And if there's a platform that you like to listen to and they don't have us, let them know you want our show on there. And remember, if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It'll help us reach more people. And I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. And again, for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Here, apply this to anywhere it hurts. It'll reduce your physical pain.
Thank you, Sensei. What about the emotional pain?
We'll learn to block a slap.
You don't spar with the Sensei. He's overcome. Don't rub it off. Rub it in.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.